following is an exclusive presentation of News Radio KMAN, your home for K-State athletics. It's game time. This is The Game on News Radio KMAN.
We are going to talk plenty about the West Virginia game coming up this weekend today here on the show. I think it's a massive swing game that can do wonders or horrors for the rest of K-State's season. Going to talk about some of that with Kellis Robinette as well coming up on the show today later on this hour as we are switching things around. He is going to be on today as opposed to tomorrow, and appreciate him being flexible and doing that. No Mitch Fortner today, just John Kurtz, Stephen Schaefer filling in for Mitch. Unfortunately, we start with some very sobering and somber news here on the show today, and that is Derek Newton, K-State football player who had played in two games this year, announced earlier this month, last month, that after playing in two games, he would transfer and leave the program. He has passed away at the age of 21, and according to Kellis Robinette's reporting from the Kansas City Star and Wichita Eagle, he says a source confirmed Newton's death and said it was by suicide. So Derek Newton, the former K-State defensive tackle who has been a part of the program twice, has committed suicide. And that is incredibly sad news to hear today. I can read you the rest of the reporting here from Kellis Robinette. Riley County Police said Thursday that during the course of a criminal investigation, they found a 21-year-old man dead in the 2000 block of College Avenue in Manhattan. No foul play suspected in the man's death. There are a lot of really sad details here. One of those is that according to his biography in K-State football's media guide, Newton had a daughter and a son. And attempts to reach Newton's family were not immediately successful, according to the story here. Riley County Police said no further information would be released because investigations are ongoing, and K-State athletic officials have deferred all comment to the police here. But you're seeing, if you are somebody that is on Twitter and you follow any of the K-State football players, you're seeing certainly a lot of emotion pouring out of those guys on Twitter today. Just looking at a tweet here from Malik Knowles. Too many goodbyes this year. Check on your loved ones. Jax Dineen shared a very emotional post as well on Twitter. Jerron McPherson, I know, is somebody that I've also seen today. So there is a lot of that. It is a tragic and very sad story. That is tough. I mentioned that Derek Newton had been a part of the program twice, so he was a part of the program under the old staff, decided to leave, went to Butler Community College, and came back to K-State this year before then announcing a transfer a little ways into the season here this year. So I would just say, I mean, I'm not going to speculate any beyond what the information and the facts are there that are being reported right now that you can find in the Kansas City Star or the Wichita Eagle. I know the Manhattan Mercury has done some reporting on this as well. I'm not going to really go beyond that other than to say you are going to have some players with really heavy hearts that go out and play the game on Saturday at West Virginia. This is something that I think will be something that's really on the mind and, you know, keeping a lot of players out there with heavy hearts when they go out and play that game on Saturday. So I can imagine that it's been a really rough day around the football offices for everybody involved there. I don't have any information for you as far as how practice is gone, if practice is still happening, is scheduled, anything like that. I feel for everybody involved here from a number of different angles, man. I mean, there is no good news, obviously, to pull out of that story or that headline or anything like that. So certainly keep the family of Derek Newton in your thoughts, and just anybody involved with the football program, coaches, support staff, players, teammates, anybody that was involved with him as well. Not a fun story to hear about at all today. And first got word of that about 10 or 11 o'clock this morning, something like that. So still pretty fresh for a lot of these guys right now. But very sad stuff. There's no easy way to transition into then talking about a game that, when you are talking about it in comparison to the loss of life in that manner, seems pretty frivolous, but it is a sports talk show. I guess that's what we have to do here. The point that I wanted to bring up about this game against West Virginia coming up on Saturday is something that I've been sitting on throughout this week and waiting until we got toward the back half of the week to really transition. Because to me, this is if we're talking about, you know, we're transitioning out of Kansas into West Virginia. This is the storyline of the game and of the week for K-State. And that is, this is a giant swing game. We're about to have a presidential election. We talk about swing states and how that can tilt elections. Swing games can tilt seasons. And that's what K-State is staring down here. So I don't know. Whatever state you want to pencil that in to be, that's what K-State has on their hands here, trying to convince said state to push them toward a Big 12 championship. This is the kind of game where you can level up your season and level up your program. Also, I would compare it to if you win the game and set up the massive showdown with Oklahoma State next week, play back-to-back really big football games in November. No matter what happens against Oklahoma State, it will be another really big game against Iowa State the week after. Playing massive, meaningful football games that have meaning toward a Big 12 championship in November in year two under Klieman, to me, is that's skipping a step or two. That's skipping a level. And we talked about this some last year where K-State's program was at. Already feels like K-State skipped a level. You'd be skipping another level here. I used to have a Game Shark back in the day, right? You would hook that up to like your N64, your PlayStation, and you could punch in some cheat codes and you get to skip things. And this feels like being able to put in a Game Shark and skip a level or two if you can win the game. Because what happens if you win the game, you're in the Big 12 title race for at least three more weeks. You're going to play two very important November football games that have direct implications to a Big 12 title. And most importantly, you avoid having the very real possibility of a three-game losing streak out there. Because if you lose, the flip side of this is, as awesome as the last month plus of football has been, with K-State winning four straight games, they are 4-1. You lose the game to West Virginia, you're 4-2. And it doesn't really take squinting to see how that turns into 4-4 pretty quickly. Because the next two games are Oklahoma State at home, best team in the Big 12, and at Iowa State. Again, I still think Iowa State is a 7-5 sort of team relative to COVID scale, however you want to do that with what their record would be this year. But going on the road to play them is far from a gimme. You can absolutely see how you lose those games pretty quick, and now you're back at 500, 4-4, and it feels like everything has fallen right through your grasp. So that all could happen very quickly if you lose this game, which is very winnable, at West Virginia on Saturday. I'll focus more here to start on the upside of this, right? Good news first as opposed to bad news. You're always supposed to give the good news first. If you win the game Saturday against West Virginia, we are talking about the biggest game that K-State has played since 2014 coming up next Saturday against Oklahoma State at home. The biggest game that K-State has played since 2014 when they played Baylor on the final day of the regular season with the Big 12 championship like still hanging in the balance. K-State still with an outside shot there. It was number 9 K-State at number 6 Baylor. College Game Day was at that game, which is easy to forget. But College Game Day was in Waco for that thing. That's the last time K-State played a game that would be as relevant to the conference title race and as relevant nationally as what K-State would be playing next week against Oklahoma State. I've had lots of questions about College Game Day, and I understand why people would ask. I would also point out Notre Dame-Clemson is next week. I doubt that you get College Game Day. But some weeks, that would be a game of that magnitude. It would be if you didn't have one of the biggest games of the college football season going on at the same time. So the fun, I talk a lot about like the fun quotient of a season. The amount of fun you can milk out of a season. Because that's what college football is all about. There's too much focus on the playoff and the upper echelon of the sport. When the real joy of college football is just the fun that happens in the regular season. And it's such a great regular season. And the fun quotient to me of the regular season gets upped a bunch if you just have a weak buildup for that game against Oklahoma State. So that would be huge. It would be huge for the program from a, you know, the opportunity to be able to play the game standpoint, but also just from an attention standpoint. Everybody likes attention. K K-State could be showered with quite a bit of attention for a week going into that game with Oklahoma State. The other part of this is, if you win the game against West Virginia, if we just start doing simple math as to how do you add up all of these games to get to a Big 12 title, you start to come up with some pretty favorable math equations if you have that win in your back pocket and you're 5-0. Oklahoma State will be very tough. Iowa State will be very tough. But after that, yes, the game is in Waco against Baylor, but I think Baylor is on the verge of coming apart at the seams. I don't think Baylor is very good. I think their quarterback situation is extremely untenable. Charlie Brewer has not been good. He looks like a shell of himself and hurt right now. Baylor's offense had 3 points through three quarters against Texas last week before putting up a bit of a fight in the fourth. Like, that's not a very tenable situation for Baylor. And speaking of teams that could have totally fallen apart by the time that you play them, the Texas game is in December. Where do we think Texas is going to be by the time they get to December? A team that has already lost twice, a team that's likely not going to make the Big 12 championship game, that already has so many off-the-field distractions swirling around them with the eyes of Texas, with the regular COVID stuff. Then on top of all of that, a team that has not met expectations this year and has Texas fans really frustrated. Then you're going to tell me they have to come to Manhattan and play in the cold in December? How has that gone for Texas teams in the past? To come play a more motivated K-State team in December in the cold in Manhattan. Okay, we're talking about K-State having 5 wins and 2 very winnable games the back part of the schedule, which could easily get you to 7, and now we're talking about it being pretty tough to keep you out of Arlington in the Big 12 championship game if you have those. Getting far ahead of myself, I realize with that, but you can start building your championship resume with these pieces, and you can start to see a very plausible path to how it happens. You really can, if you win the game against West Virginia on Saturday. I think it would be tough to keep K-State out at that point, because I do think that they will get Baylor, and then you're looking at, hey, try to go get Texas, Iowa State, or Oklahoma State to put yourself in a really good chance to make it happen. And the overarching point here about what does happen if you're able to beat West Virginia and get to 5 Big 12 wins already, you would have already matched the Big 12 win total from last year. And that may not seem like a big deal, and it is an asterisk year where it's been a weird year in the league and all across college football. Totally get it. But year two was supposed to be like the dip in the climbing era early on because of who you lost. And then COVID happened. And then it appeared even tougher. And then you lost your starting quarterback. And then it appeared even tougher. You're starting a true freshman quarterback. And if after all of that, you've guaranteed yourself, at worst, matching your Big 12 win total from last year, man, everybody would have signed up for that at the beginning of the year. Everybody back in August would have signed up for that with this program to just tread water through an unbelievably crazy time and crazy year in 2020. And that was without knowing that you wouldn't have Skylar Thompson for most of the season. That would be a giant accomplishment for the program. It would. If they win the game on Saturday against West Virginia and get to that level already, when it was supposed to be the down year and you lost your quarterback and COVID is going on, that would be a really big accomplishment for the program. And it takes me back to leveling up here. Leveling up where this program was supposed to be. Leveling up where the rebuild was supposed to be. Under Chris Klieman here in year two of his program. So there's a lot on the line Saturday. There really is. And I don't think you can make too much out of that in this case. The season is not over if you lose the game, obviously. Even a Big 12 championship is not out of the question. If you do lose the game, it would be only your first Big 12 loss. But it would definitely put a lot of doubt in your head, especially depending on how it happens. If it happens with the offense really struggling and floundering, which would be the most likely scenario for a loss because West Virginia has a defense that's better than their offense, then yeah, you're going to have a lot of doubt. Massive game on Saturday. I'm excited for it. I'm very much looking forward to it. We'll talk about that coming up with Kellis Robinette from the Kansas City Star and Wichita Eagle. He is going to join me for a couple of segments, and I do need to have Kellis give his guy, and I guess our guy, somewhat friend of the show, Jesse Newell, KU beat writer for the Kansas City Star. I need to have Kellis give him a shout-out. I'll tell you about it next. All right, back here on the game, John Kurtz with Stephen Schaefer, who's filling in today for Mitch Fortner. Kellis Robinette joins us from the Kansas City Star and Wichita Eagle. Appreciate the time. As always, Kellis, unfortunately, we start today with what's been a really sad story to find out from earlier today, and you've done some reporting on this in the Kansas City Star and Wichita Eagle, but former K-State football player Derek Newton passed away at the age of 21, and according to your reporting, it was confirmed a suicide. So what information can you give us, the latest that that you have at this time on that story?
I mean, really not much more than that, unfortunately. It's just a bad deal. You never want to see anybody die at the age of 21 for any reason, and you can certainly understand why a lot of Kansas State players and family members were posting a lot of emotional messages out there on social media today. It's kind of unclear exactly if there were any other factors that led to the suicide. There's a chance there were, there's a chance they're not. So I'm just not going to really go into anything else at this point. I hope you understand that.
Definitely do understand it. If you do want to read more, you can find Kellis' article, link to his Twitter account. Just follow at Kellis Robinette on Twitter. That is how I found it, if you do want more information as far as that is concerned. As far as K-State is concerned this week, I do want to touch on the Kansas game here. Would you agree with the statement that Saturday's game said far more about Kansas than it did K-State?
Probably, just because it seemed like in that first half, Les Miles was handing out points to Chris Kleiman and the Wildcats like they came to his door trick-or-treating. I mean, I hope that was a good Halloween reference for you there, but I mean,
it was not bad.
I mean, it was just, I couldn't imagine being a KU fan watching all those plays out there. I mean, the first punt returned by Phillip Brooks. Okay. He actually put a good move on some guys, and Brock Monty was out there and leveling the punter. Okay, you kind of have to deal with that. Fool me once, whatever. But then to just keep punting to him over and over and over, especially to do it at the end of the half with that line drive punt, was just ridiculous. That's basically just like saying, here, take these points. And then the Justin Gardner pick six. I mean, hey, credit to him. He read that play perfectly. But I bet you or Mitch or anybody else could have picked off that ball too. Just a horrible, horrible play. And I was actually talking to Jesse Newell about this. On first glance, I texted him and told him that was about as disorganized as the KU team as I'd ever seen. I felt bad that him and Gary Bedore have to watch them all the time. And he actually pointed out that, at least in the first half, that should have been one of their better efforts, because their total yardage was 150 to 147. I mean, there were a lot of ways you could say that KU actually came out and played K-State even. And yet it's 34-7 at halftime, and then they just give up in the second half. It just, I guess, goes to show you the importance of good coaching, good recruiting, and putting it all together on game day, because K-State was a more organized team, and that's really all they needed to turn that game into a blowout.
Well, Stephen, if you could do me a favor here, because Kellis brought him up and I was going to talk about him anyway, if you could hit the hotkey for Baylor and Newell's ballot for us here, one of Kellis' favorites.
Yeah!
Tell me where in the world is Baylor in Newell's ballot. I wanted to tell you to give Jesse Newell a nice pat on the back for me for going after the Kansas special teams units with all the fervor that he could possibly muster up there, because man, it was like tweet after tweet putting in context just how awful they were.
Yeah, they were historically bad. K-State was historically good. It was a perfect storm of Phillip Brooks out there. And, man, it's crazy to think that he was he's a receiver. I'm sure he went into that game hoping that he could catch a receiving touchdown. But he left it as, the top Big 12 player of the week without catching a single pass. And it didn't look very difficult for him.
Yeah, I mean, Kellis Robinette talking with me. Is it as crazy simple as me just saying maybe it's not a good idea to go get your special teams coordinator and your offensive coordinator from Bethel University in Tennessee? Like, maybe that wasn't a great call?
I mean, it's not looking like it. No. I would, if I was starting a program right now and looking to hire both an offensive coordinator and a special teams coach, I would not go to Bethel.
Okay.
Not at all. I would try to hire Stanton Weber. That is what I would try to do if I was trying to find
a
special teams coach.
You're telling me, man, I want Stanton to be around here forever, but like, there has to be somebody getting ready to back up a dump truck full of money or something to hire him away to coach special teams here before long, I would have to think. I'm going to ask one last question here about the futility of Kansas before we move on to other things, which I know is really your expertise. But your thoughts on Gavin Potter, the whole Gavin Potter situation, whiffing on Deuce Vaughn, responding to my tweet by comparing himself to Ray Lewis, just your general Gavin Potter thoughts.
I kind of both, you know, I'm not sure exactly how I feel on this. I kind of respect it a little bit that he can go out there and whiff on two tackles the way he did against the school that he burned, was once committed to, and then kind of burned with his recruitment announcement, but then to come out and still, so I mean, obviously to do those things makes you want to sit back and kind of point and laugh a little bit, but then to come back and you know, push back hard, comparing himself to Ray Lewis, and the one time he did tackle Deuce Vaughn, he had a nice little dance out there saying that he's still going to get the last laugh over the next 2 years. You got to admire that confidence. Not sure where it's coming from, but shoot, I mean, short memory, shoot your shot, right?
Oh, well, you actually pretty much stole my take from the other day. Like, I respect it. I do. It makes it fun to have, you know, another villainous character over there to root for. And, like, he's playing, he's leaning into the wrestling heel thing.
Well, and it's what's so strange about it is that, I mean, normally in rivalries like this, it's really easy to, you know, for one fan base to hate another team's coach, or maybe to hate another team's, you know, most senior player. Maybe hate's a strong word, but you know what I mean. Feel like somebody that you can root against. Well, this guy's only been there for 2 years. I mean, it's crazy for a college football player to build up this much venom from an opposing fan base 2 years into his career. It's somewhat admirable in that way.
Yeah, honestly, it is. It's a good point the way you put it. How much reason for hope is there in the way that K-State's offense played those first three drives of the third quarter?
Well, that was encouraging. I mean, special teams is obviously the story of that game. It's what I wrote about. It's what you talked about the last couple of weeks. It was a big deal, but if there's like a takeaway from that game that you want to say, boy, I really like what Kansas State might be able to do moving forward, it was that third quarter where finally Will Howard connected with Malik Knowles. Then he just starts dealing, getting the ball to Sebastian Taylor. He hit DJ Wander, Riley Moore, Deuce Vaughn. I mean, they rattled off three long drives in that quarter, 220 yards, 21 points. I know it was against the KU defense that maybe had given up at that point, but still, it's hard to play that well against air sometimes. So I was impressed. I mean, things will get a lot harder this week against West Virginia, one of the better defensive teams in the conference, but it at least showed what Will Howard's potential was and reminded some people that there's more weapons on this offense than just Deuce Vaughn and Bradley Moore. And that's really what they've needed. If they're going to make a run at the Big 12 championship over the long haul, they need to get everyone more involved, and that was what was so encouraging about it.
Did you see the list from Pro Football Focus of how they ranked Big 12 quarterbacks?
I missed that one. What was it?
Well, the part that I want to bring up here is that it had Will Howard number 7 and Brock Purdy number 8.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, are you still applauding, or?
Well, I'm just saying Brock Purdy has been massively overrated throughout his entire career, and I'm just happy that somebody is noticing it. This time it's Pro Football Focus.
Yeah, who were the top 6 then?
I was hoping you wouldn't ask that because number two.
Dark questions.
Well, no, because number two was Jarrett Daigie, so it's hard to put a ton of stock into the list. Okay. But Will Howard was number seven and Brock Purdy was number eight. That's what we need to focus on.
Well, I mean, if that's legit, Will Howard is the seventh best quarterback in the conference with two starts under his belt? Yeah, two starts in only four games. I mean, that's pretty encouraging, I would think.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah, I mean, you want to see him first, but shoot, seventh after that limited action, coming in when he didn't really expect to behind Skyler. That's real encouraging, and I think Pro Football Focus for the most part has been pretty good on their grades when it comes to quarterbacks. I thought last year when they had Skyler ranked really high early, I thought that was accurate. And coming off a big game last week, I can see that. I don't know that I totally agree he's a better player than Brock Purdy just yet.
Oh, Kellis.
But come on. But yeah, encouraging.
Should we take a bet here? I bet that Will Howard will have better numbers than 162 yards passing, no touchdowns, and one pick against Oklahoma State. I will bet you a six pack of pumpkin beer.
well, pumpkin beer is starting to get harder to find, so that's a strong bet. But what's hard about that though is that Will Howard can just dump the ball off to Deuce for like a 5-yard pass, and he could turn it into a touchdown.
Hang on here. Brock Purdy has Breece Hall.
He's not throwing to him all the time, though, is he?
He's got two NFL tight ends, and apparently Purdy himself is a first-round draft pick. I mean, that's all I hear.
Yeah, and he's got the greatest coach who's ever walked in the face of the earth.
Man, Newt Rockne.
He does have a lot of advantages.
Yeah, he's got Newt Campbell running the sideline.
Let me think about that one. But yeah, we could maybe make that. I mean, I know you don't want six pumpkin beers. Maybe I could get you six like raspberry beers or something.
Okay. Well, I have a pumpkin beer update for you. You can think about the bet as well, and then I'll get you the full list of quarterbacks. All of that when we come back with Kellis Robinette. Okay, couple things here, Kellis. One, did you see on Twitter that I tried my first pumpkin beer last night?
I did. I appreciated an invite to drink them with you, but
well,
whatever.
It was trivia night, okay, and there was a limit 4 players to a team, okay. So I was just invited to go play some trivia, and I saw that Manhattan Brewing Company had a pumpkin beer, and it was delicious. I enjoyed it quite a bunch.
Well, good. I've actually been meaning to maybe stop by there and try that one, but it gets the John Kurtz stamp of approval.
It does, yeah. You know, it was like it had a little bit of sweetness to it. I didn't feel like it was like overpowering with pumpkin. It was pretty good. I liked it.
Okay, nice. Yeah, there's a wide scale. You get some like that are kind of have low alcohol content, just kind of have a hint of it, and you like it. Then there are others that are high alcohol content and kind of taste like you're drinking pumpkin pie on Thanksgiving Day. I like them both at certain times, but I actually went into the store the other day and was looking to pick up a few more, and they were completely out. So maybe I have to get up the brewery.
You will. Have you thought about this bet? Are you going to take my bet that Will Howard will have a better stat line than Brock Purdy did against Oklahoma State?
What were stats again? So just 167.
He had 162 yards, I believe. Let me pull it up to make sure. I know it was no touchdowns, one interception, and I believe it was 162 yards. It was 19 of 34 for 162 yards. And I take it back. He had that late touchdown, one touchdown, one pick.
Okay, Lance CD. Well, and running is not a factor in this. We're just talking purely passing.
We'll just go. You want to go QBR? His QBR was 54.9.
QBR. Well, that's a pretty low rating. That is a pretty low rating, especially for somebody as good as him. What did he have rushing? Does it say that on there?
Rushing, he had 12 carries for 38 yards.
Unless you're talking about like about 200 all-purpose yards and one TD. I don't know. That's close. That's
okay. Tough. All right. That's well, let's, you know what. Kellis.
I mean, I'm not, I kind of think that Will does top that. Here.
Okay, all right. So no bet. Fine. Everybody waited. There's no bet. Here's the list from Pro Football Focus. Number one is Spencer Rattler. Actually, like far and away, they have him as one of the absolute best in the country. Number two is Jarrett Daigie. Number three is Max Duggan. So, you know. Number four is Sam Ehlinger. Number five is Henry Columbia. Number six is Spencer Sanders. Number seven, Will Howard. Number eight, Brock Purdy. Number nine, Charlie Brewer. And number 10, Jalen Daniels.
They got Sanders ahead of Howard, huh? Hasn't he only played in the one game?
Yes, he played like a series maybe against Tulsa and then the other game the other day. So, yeah, it's a flawed list because you have had some quarterback instability within the league. But at least it shows that Will Howard has been competent enough that he's ahead of Brock Purdy and Charlie Brewer. I mean, that's the other thing, too, that was all this discussion. I can remember all the talks we had about Alan Bowman and Charlie Brewer and Skylar Thompson. Like, who would you take out of those three? Like, Charlie Brewer's been really bad this year. So it provides you some level of context here. I can understand looking at this list and saying I'm not going to take it really seriously because Jarrett Daigie and Max Duggan are 2 and 3, but, you know, you can glean something from it.
Yeah, I did think I saw something from Pro Football Focus on Rattler I thought was interesting. They had... They pulled out three plays that were trying to show how good of a quarterback he's been. And as I watched him, they were three incomplete passes that hit guys like in the hands and dropped them downfield. I'm like, why in the world would they pick these plays? But that's actually what they were illustrating. That if the most impressive throws he was making were actually getting caught, then his stats would be off the charts. So, kudos to those guys for putting in that work. But I'm thinking about it more here. Going back to the bet we were talking about. What if you gave me some kind of odds, like if you win, you have to share one or two of those beers with me.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
I mean, Will Howard gets home field in that game.
All right, well, but
that's got to be worth something.
We'll come up with specific terms next week. How about that?
All right. But we'll call it a gentleman's agreement for now.
Yes. Memorandum of understanding or whatever.
Hey, there you go.
How much of a swing game is this thing on Saturday for K-State with West Virginia?
It's about as big as they come. They're 4-1 on top of the conference right now. Don't have a single loss in Big 12 play, which is fantastic. But they're underdogs in West Virginia. I know some K-State fans don't like or understand that, but I think it's fair. The Mountaineers were one of the teams that surprised Kansas State last season and beat them here. They've got that weird kind of defensive front. They switched from three different defensive linemen to four, and I think that's always confused Courtney Messingham and that offense. And you're going on the road with a freshman quarterback. I think it's going to be a hard game. I think it's a toss-up. Right now it made me lean a little bit towards West Virginia just because they probably have the best defense Kansas State has played yet. And I think that'll be difficult for them to handle. But at the same time, you know, we thought they might have trouble with Oklahoma, with TCU, and they overcame those challenges. So it's hard to pick against Kansas State right now. But if they can win this game and get to 5-1, which is four more left, I mean, really, if you beat West Virginia, pretty much gives Kansas State a scenario where if they can beat either Oklahoma State or Iowa State, if they win one of those next two games, that probably puts them in really good shape to get to Arlington. But if they lose to West Virginia, then all of a sudden you may be looking at having to win both. You definitely have to win one. So if Kansas State has eyes on making the Big 12 championship game, this is one they need to win.
Totally agreed. Let me give you this pushback, though, on the West Virginia defense. And I think West Virginia's defense is solid, but they have played Eastern Kentucky, Baylor, Kansas, Texas Tech, and then Oklahoma State. Okay, so they did get Oklahoma State. But Baylor, Kansas, Texas Tech, Eastern Kentucky for four out of the five games ain't exactly murderer's row. This is not
No, it's not.
This is not the what year Yankees is it that they always reference, like the Murderers Row, what year, Yankees team. Right. Anyway, you get the point.
Right, I got you. No, I understand that. And Texas Tech did put up some points on them last week, so they're not the 85 Bears. That would be the reference I would make, not some
okay.
baseball.
Okay, fair, fair.
But I do think that they can cause problems for Kansas State just based on what I saw last year. I mean, if you go back and look at all the games Kansas State lost last year, it was pretty much against teams that played that odd front with three defensive linemen. And I'm also kind of intrigued to see. So the first four games that Kansas State played this year were against, if you go in by coaching, it was Lincoln Riley, Les Miles,
Gary Patterson.
Yeah, Gary Patterson. And who's Texas coach?
Matt Wells.
Matt Wells. Okay, there you go. There you go. I was thinking Matt Hall. That was what was popping up with my name, but I know he was coaching. But those are all four coaches that Chris Kleiman beat last year. So he's 8-0 against those guys. He owns them. Going to those games, just mark down Kansas State because he owns them so bad. But he lost to Neil Brown last year. He lost to Mike Gundy last year. He lost to
Tom Herman
last year. He lost to, I guess Matt Rhule, so maybe that opens up the Baylor game a little bit. But so far, he's perfect against the coaches, some coaches, and then he's winless against some coaches. Can he turn that around and split with Neil Brown this year? I think that's kind of an interesting chess match that maybe some people are overlooking.
Yeah, that is it's a very good stat, like a stat of the day. About where K-State football is at, it is. That feels to me like something that can be fluky. I'm not buying into that yet being a total thing. And I'm with you on like Baylor is going to be completely up for grabs. I think they win the bit. I don't really fear Baylor very much, so I think that'll be a win, and thus underscores the importance of this. You get this, then yeah, Baylor, that's six. I mean, you're already 6-3. The path to Arlington becomes, yeah, find a way to win one of those two games against Oklahoma State or Iowa State, and you'll be sitting pretty.
Yeah, if you do it against Iowa State, you're probably there.
Yeah.
Because they've already got the one loss.
Yeah, you're right. All right, so you're going to pick K-State to win. Final thoughts here, Kellis.
On the football game or anything in general?
Well, you're picking them to beat West Virginia.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about, my thoughts on daylight savings or something. I probably lean in West Virginia by a very slim margin, but that could change. I still got another day before I got another prediction. So.
All right.
I'm pretty much riding a coin flip right now. I might even let the coin decide it for me.
That would actually be awesome. You should do that. But put a Twitter video out of you literally flipping the coin. To see which side you go with your prediction.
Yeah, like years ago, it's like maybe like 83, the year I was born, 2020, new as I can get. What do you think?
I would say as new as you can get. You find a bright, shiny quarter and you flip it.
Flip it, okay. And then pick that team by 1 point.
Yep.
That's a pretty good strategy, actually.
Yep. All right, Kellis, appreciate you being flexible this week and coming on today.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a much more versatile journalist than Derek Young. I'm willing to do Thursday, Friday, Wednesday, you name it, anything for my favorite radio station here in Manhattan.
Oh, wow, shots fired. I love it. All right, we'll talk to you soon, Kellis.
All right, see you.
There's Kellis Robinette from the Kansas City Star and Wichita Eagle. Back to wrap up the end of the hour. I'll try and give you a Nebraska update here. They're getting owned by the Big Ten again. We'll see if we have time for it next. All right, I ran us out of time, really, here in hour one. I'll give you the Nebraska news. They were shut down once again by the Big Ten today, and they're doing their fair share of whining, I tell you what, about what has gone on with the Wisconsin game being canceled. But how much Saturday can change the rest of the season? The bad side of the coin coming up next here on the game.